Page 116. The end of 115. The end of 115 was the just the preparation for the next canto, canto 3.
Yes.
So here he starts to climb. Up to here it was like a courtyard. Above the physical world, the subtle physical world. And there is absolutely material perfection. The solid density of matter not being there, it is permanent, it doesn't break up, it is delicate, it is flawless, but it is lifeless. He knew that he can't, it is very attractive, but he knew that he can't stop there. He is making a journey of consciousness. And this is the first stage of consciousness, the play of manifestation of consciousness. Wherever there is a kind of a pattern, formation, regularity, there is some form of consciousness. So from there, he realizes he has to move on. He left that fine material paradise. His destiny lay beyond in larger space. His destiny, that is man's destiny. Because he is making the journey for man. This is Ashwapati, earth's aspiration. So entering the world of the vital. The vital is the world of energy. All kinds of forces, some extremely marvelous, full of beauty, joy, laughter, love, some extremely the opposite, suffering, pain, disorder, which was also part of the vital enjoyment. Man loves that world also. A life without grief is something he would not like at a certain stage. Life which is only pleasure or smiling happiness becomes for him something that is without sufficient interest. So the glory and the fall of life. An uneven broad ascent now lured his feet. Therefore, it is not a very stable world. You can really, that staircase, the ladder there, is a perhaps a broken stair. Answering a greater nature's troubled call. Troubled, because there is the play of energy. The energy is not channelized in the right way. It is not orderly. Whereas in the previous canto, that energy was not there. Here there is a play of energy. It's like for us, you discover a new capacity, a new faculty, which you would like to experiment with, but you don't know how to master it. So this is the world. We don't know how to master the field of the vital. It masters us for a while. It pulls us in this way or in that. But without that, there cannot be any change, any growth, any forward movement. The vital is essential. Without it, nothing can be done. He crossed the limits of embodied mind and entered wide, obscure, disputed fields. Embodied mind, because it was simply a physical being with a mind, life, body, which he was earlier, and now enters the world of the vital play of forces, where all was doubt and change and nothing sure. In that fine material universe of the previous canto, there was no doubt. Everything was clearly, in a very orderly manner, organized, arranged. But here, there was doubt, because there is no stability. A world of search and toil without repose. As one who meets the face of the unknown, a questioner with none to give reply, and that is very troublesome when we have problems, questions, difficulties, and we don't know where the solution lies or who is going to help us out of that difficulty. There is always the sense of being tormented, disturbed. A questioner with none to give reply, attracted to a problem never solved. For a while, one is not even sure what exactly is the problem. How can you solve a problem when you're not very clear about what the problem is? Life is a problem. The vital play of forces, where things are constantly moving like waves on the water. They're not steady. Always uncertain of the ground he trod. That is the whole thing. Because he's not walking on very solid ground. Solid ground comes when there is matter. There is no solid ground here. Always drawn on to an inconstant goal. What exactly do you understand, inconstant goal?
Shifting.
Yes. You think you've arrived. Then you say, no, it's not this. Go further. When you go there, it's not exactly like this. That's exactly how it is in our state. He travelled through a land peopled by doubts, in shifting confines on a quaking base. Everything is all the time filled with all kinds of possibilities, no certainties. What exactly is the problem? Where lies the solution? Is there a solution? What is the solution man wants? In the world of the vital, the solution usually will be arriving at a sense of perfect joy. That sense of fulfillment, that happiness, perfect happiness gives. But perfect happiness, today's happiness is replaced by tomorrow's happiness. Today what your vital being asks for, tomorrow it doesn't ask for that anymore, it wants something else. That is the whole thing. So we keep on moving.
This one, a white obscure disputed face. Disputed by disputedness?
You're not even sure what the outlines are. Is this the field? This field is here, this field is there. It's like sometimes when you see pictures, the pictures keep on if we are in the very ordinary state of consciousness, this journey in the beginning would be frightening. Because you don't know where you're going, you don't know the place through which you're passing, the landscape keeps on changing, something almost ghostly. Because that's the world of the vital. All kinds of forces are there. But he is a seeker of knowledge. This is the traveler of the worlds. So he continues without any hesitation. All kinds of forces will try to stop him. Like man, when he tries to progress, he will meet, the more he tries to progress, the more the difficulties multiply. Problems always increase. So he is moving in this vital world. This vital world is not necessarily... There are two levels of the vital, by the way. There is the lower vital. It is that part of the play of energy, of passion, desire, all the anger and all the drives of our inferior nature. There is the higher vital, where there is the capacity for love, which is offered to some higher goal, like you can have the sense of gratefulness, which is almost psychic. You can give self-sacrifice, self-giving. This is less self-centered. This is the higher vital. This is also part of our vital world. The vital has many levels. So you can be on the higher vital level. You can be in the field of a greater ideal, like the courage, the self-sacrifice of a patriot who gives himself to his country without any thought of his own self-protection. Or the lower vital, which is much more active, which is the field of desire. I want. And all kinds of things man wants at all different moments. He is passing through these. That is why you might say rungs of this ladder are shaky. It's not steady. It's not stable. It's not a kind of a plane which is once and for all like this. The vital life is very complex. But without which there can be no change. You cannot progress, you cannot go forward. There can be, with enthusiasm and courage and fearlessness, that man who wants to move forward, he has to have vitality. If you do not have vitality, you cannot go forward. That is the whole thing. But people, those sages, were so aware of this problem that they wanted to withdraw from the vital world as much as possible. Cut themselves off from the world of life. Isolate themselves in solitude, meditation, concentrating only on the inner soul presence. But man is not only that. This world also has been created by the divine. There must be a reason. This world, which can be full of problems, there must be a reason. We have to learn to recognize why it is there and what we have to become in order to not become a slave of this world. He traveled through a land peopled by doubts, in shifting confines on a quaking base. In front he saw a boundary, ever unreached, and thought himself at each step nearer now. It's like some kind of a mirage. You reach and you think you've found it, and no, it's not that. You go further, it's still not that. A far retreating horizon of mirage. A vagrancy was there that brooked no home. Nothing stable. Everything was moving all the time. A journey of countless paths without a close. Because always you need a close. Whenever you have a journey, you're making a journey to reach a goal. So the goal usually has to precede the attempt to make a journey. I want to go there. So that place has to exist before I start making an attempt to go there. So the end is usually that which precedes the beginning. It is for an end that we do something. But this end was not there. So where to go? What to do? That is why people are so lost in their way. If they are caught in the vital world, they are often very lost. Nothing he found to satisfy his heart. A tireless wandering sought and could not cease. There, life is the manifest incalculable. Manifest absolute. Life is something you cannot predict, you cannot be sure. It doesn't have a formula, it doesn't have an equation, it's not this or that. It is energy. Obviously, life is energy. Energy controlled, channelized, pushed in one particular direction. For that you need a very strong mental will. But life doesn't like to be controlled. A movement of unquiet seas. A long and venturous leap of spirit into space. Space is the field of manifestation. Spirit, the consciousness, entered into the field of manifestation. And at this, it is as if took this, you might say, opportunity which is from when we start doing something, and for the first time, we are not sure we'll be able to do it. We are not sure whether it will be successful. Many things which are great start with this knowledge of incertitude. But if you do not try it, can you make an attempt? You have to make an attempt. Many attempts fail. But without it, nothing can be done. And this is the play of contradictions that is the vital. Without it, nothing can be done. But there is no formula, no certain answer. This is the right thing to do. The right thing for you, for me to do today is not the right thing for me tomorrow. Because by then, other forces have entered into my being. I've become the plaything of another, you might say, set of emotions, desires, passions. So what I was yesterday and what I will be tomorrow is not the same person. So how can you say from before? That is why the whole advice that used to be given was know yourself first, control yourself first, withdraw from the world of desire as much as possible. Only then can you take hold of yourself. But here, Ashwapati, this is what Sri Aurobindo also has told us. But here Ashwapati is saying, or seeing, why then is desire? Because it is a push. Desire is a drive. It is an impulsion. It is something that takes us from what we are to something other. Whether that something else is going to raise us or break us, that we have to wait to see. So it is always in the world that is unsure. That is why it is the playfield of glory and fall. Nothing he found to satisfy his heart, a tireless wandering sought and could not cease. Their life is the manifest incalculable, a movement of unquiet seas, a long and venturous leap of spirit into space. The conscious creative force, the spirit, has leaped into the field of manifestation. Space is the place where all manifestation takes place. If you go beyond space, you enter into the infinite. In the infinite, there is no manifestation. There is only that. There is only Tat. There is only the Brahman. But once you enter into the field of time and space, you enter into the finite. In the field of the finite, there are all kinds of different possibilities, very, very disorganized at this stage. So they can make you or shape you or break you or destroy you. A vexed disturbance in the eternal calm. An impulse and passion of the infinite. It is as if the infinite is also trying out. It's like somebody who said, let's try out. We try out things and they don't always succeed. We try out things, sometimes they succeed. The first time you try something, it's good. The next time you do the same thing, it's less good. So it is that sense of the unexpected all the time. An impulse and passion of the infinite, assuming whatever shape her fancy wills, whatever she wants. Her fancy. Fancy is a very changeable wanting, a whim. It doesn't last. It's often associated with it's a very feminine movement. Now you want this. No, I don't like it anymore. I want that. So this is the whole field. Life is, there is a very beautiful description of life by Sri Aurobindo in his poem on life. And there, at the end, it realizes that even in rags I am a god. Fallen, I am divine. Life is a fallen force. But without it, there can be no progress, no change.
What is the her here?
Life. Life. The vital. Assuming whatever shape her fancy wills, escaped from the restraint of settled forms. The restraint of settled forms is the subtle physical. The subtle physical of the previous canto, where everything was neat and tidy and beautiful and well organized in that world of subtlety, so that there can be no breakup. In our material world, things can be made, they can be broken. In that world of plans, of perfect forms, nothing breaks up. The plan is perfect. The working out of the plan may be imperfect. So that subtle physical world is very beautiful. It is permanent. Death does not happen there. Deterioration doesn't take place there. So it is extremely reliable. You enter into that world and you know where you are. Here, it's the opposite. It's very unreliable. But it is exciting, full of discovery, all kinds of possibilities. So people are much more drawn to the world of the vital. Men mostly live in the vital. Man is supposed to be a mental being, but for a very, very long time, he's not necessarily a mental being, only. There is a mind, but mind is often pressed down by the pressure of the vital movements. Escape from the restraint of settled forms, she has left the safety of the tried and known. There. Unshepherded by the fear that walks through time, the fear that walks through time is the fear of dissolution, death. Whatever has a fixed form breaks up in the world of time. And that is what keeps us within certain limits. The vital has no physical form. It's just a field of forces. It's like wind. It's like water. They don't have any fixed form. The vital is often associated either with water or with wind. They have no fixity. So there is no fear of form. Undaunted by fate that dogs and chance that springs. Dogs is something, it's a verb, huh? To dog, to follow. To follow without, like a dog, which absolutely obstinately following what it is supposed to find or look for. Or sometimes unexpected chance. You didn't expect something wonderful or something terrible may happen. She accepts disaster as a common risk and sometimes enjoys the disaster. It's not boring, it's not expected. Careless of suffering, heedless of sin and fall. That is the whole thing. What is sin? Sin is that which is something that turns us away from the light, that's all. But it's moving in all directions. So sometimes it turns his back. Man can turn his back to the light and he does it knowingly, happily. She wrestles with danger and discovery. She, this life force, when man becomes taken up by this vital force, you cannot really expect something that is sure to happen. Somebody may... There are beings like that who are very, very strong vital beings, who are like almost sponges. They absorb vital forces. And at certain moments, they can seem very, very beautiful, kind, luminous. The next moment you find is the very opposite. Because that person is not in control of himself. That force is controlling him. We are not, if we are a mental person, we know how to control ourselves. We create certain norms and standards and you can live by those standards. But if you do not have norms and standards, the vital doesn't have standards. It's just like a breeze or a wind or a storm, what depending on the nature of the vital, that enters into me. I can't control the play of the wind. It has entered into my life. It has blown away all my objects if my windows are open. If the rain comes into my house, I can't stop it from coming. It washes away many things. the good, the bad, everything. So she wrestles with danger and discovery in the unexplored expanses of the soul. These are the fields of experience that the spirit has accepted knowingly to go through. The consciousness has entered into a body. The bodily life is a living body, and that is the whole problem. When there is a very strong vitality, you have to be also... There are beings of great power. They are vital beings. Sometimes like Rakshasas, Asuras. But according to our legends, they knew that they are vital forces. So they knew that they have tremendous power. But if they could concentrate on that power, they would call down a force greater than their own into them. So you have great sadhaks. Ravan was a great sadhak. He used to pull forces into him. He knew that he was not just a being, not just a living being. He was the embodiment. And by the way, he was, I suppose, the great-grandson of Brahma. As well. So you see the play of the universal creator. He put so much energy into that being. But if that energy could be turned to the source of light, it could become remarkable. If it isn't, it can be remarkably destructive as well. So that is danger and discovery in the unexplored expanses of the soul. To be seemed only a long experiment. The hazard of a seeking ignorant force. It is as if you live by trial and error. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That tries all truths and finding none supreme, moves on unsatisfied, unsure of its end. When the mental, you might say, principle becomes dominant, then you find one supreme solution. But until you have obeying the mental world, it is a world of constant discovery, constant unexpectedness, of power, of joy, of grief, of violence, of beauty, all the different aspects of the vital passions. That tries all truths and finding none supreme, moves on unsatisfied, unsure of its end. As saw some inner mind, so life was shaped. Some inner mind, some force inside has created this world. Must be a reason. Life is given to us. And it is when is at the early stages of one's sadhana or inner knowledge, one is usually advised to stay away from all vital activities, satisfactions, desires. Even in the early years of the ashram, this is what Sri Aurobindo had advised. But later it changed. Because it has to be taken up. You cannot control, you cannot master a force unless you take it up. You have to take it up. And you have not to let it master you, but you have to master it. So that has to be an inner growth. You have to face the problem. You have to handle the problem and overcome the problem, but not turning your back to the problem. So that was necessary at a certain stage. But what is the answer? Mind is not a final answer. Mind makes rules. The vital doesn't care for rules. It breaks them happily and does whatever it likes. You make a rule, I break it, doesn't matter. So there has to be another greater power than the mind, greater than the vital, a greater life has to come. Otherwise, life will bend the rule, say, you'll make the rule that will satisfy you. This is what we always do. We change the rules according to our convenience, because mind is not strong. It has a certain amount of clarity, but it is very rigid and weak. Now, the vital is not rigid. Vital is force. It will shape, it will break, it will undo. Whatever rules are made, you break the rules. Go on forward. You fight, you win, you enjoy, you suffer. All this makes life what man wants, exciting. You cannot predict anything. And it's not boring, whatever it is. From thought to thought she passed, from phase to phase. She's shaping, making her own rules. One thought is made, this you should not do. The moment you say, you should not do, you do it. Automatically. Tortured by her own powers, or proud and blessed. Now master of herself, now toy and slave. A huge inconsequence was her action's law. Inconsequence is when you are not, when there is no consequence. In our understanding of the mind, you feel that things have a consequence. If I do this, what will happen? This world, who cares what will happen? We'll see. You're not bothered with what is going to happen. That sense of a fixed pattern is the first thing one breaks. It gives what is one of the fundamental aspects of the delight of existence. Actually, it is a diminished, very diminished form of the ananda, of the delight of experience. Everything can become delight. Anything can be delight. Pain becomes delight also. Joy becomes delight. Fear becomes delight. Some people are very attracted to fear. They don't like to feel safe. They foresee pain, they foresee fear. It gives to life a certain flavor, a certain taste. This is, you see, the vital nature is very, very unpredictable. It is neither good nor bad. It is like this. It doesn't follow any laws of virtue and sin, good and bad. It's not that word. The mind makes these rules of virtue and sin. But the vital, be happy. Whatever makes you happy today, which will not make you happy tomorrow, maybe doesn't matter. We'll find something else tomorrow. And so it goes on, a continuous shifting of goals, of experiences. But that's what keeps the joy of life living. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. So it's not the same thing. Whereas if you live in a very strict, codified existence, you know exactly what to expect. This is the law. If this happens, this will be the consequence. If that happens, this is what you have to go through. That is not this world. This is not the world of life. So it can be beautiful, it can be frightening, it can be enjoyable, it can be painful. But all these experiences, this is like the ocean, it's like the wind. That's why water and wind. It blows in all directions, it flows in all directions. A huge inconsequence was her action's law. As if all possibilities must be drained. One has to try out everything. Try out also the possibility of death. Life is really the other face of death. The beginning always leads to an end. And anguish and bliss were pastimes of the heart. Pain and joy. In a gallop of thunder-hoofed vicissitudes are sudden changes, very sudden, unexpected changes for the worse, usually. Not for the better, for the worse. A sudden, terrifying thing happens, most unexpectedly, it's a vicissitude. So it's like something gallops into your life, you did not expect this terrible thing to happen, but it has happened in a gallop of thunder-hoofed vicissitudes. She swept, that is life, she swept through the raised fields of circumstance. It's like a chariot. The field of time is the field of circumstance. Life force, the chariot driving through the fields of circumstance. Or swaying, she tossed between her heights and deeps, uplifted or broken on time's inconstant wheel. The chariot of time, usually there is a wheel. Time turns. The wheel breaks, the chariot can't. It can't be driven. It's a vicissitude. the instrument that we are living on or living in is the body. It breaks. The life energy that the body contains diminishes, increases, weakens, strengthens, the passions rise, the passions fall. So it is in constant wheel. Amid a tedious crawl of drab desires. On the other side, you have the smallness. Most of the time we don't have these tremendous passions and tremendous desires. We have small things. You want a small aim, a little success, a little satisfaction. If I get this, I'll be happy. If I get that, it is drab. It is not attractive. It is not splendid. But man can't live with splendor. Most of the time he's once in a while something marvelous, but otherwise something that is petty, small, fills our life. So she, life, amid a tedious, slow, boring crawl, that is also our life, of drab desires, she writhed, a worm mid worms in nature's mud. That is the elementary life. The elementary life, the first life form in the world of mud, is the worm. Man is a worm. Man is not much better. For a while, man also can become a worm. That little bit of energy. We have this sense of living. The worm wants to survive. I've often wondered, why does the worm want to survive? What does it survive for? What is its aim? Does it have one? But it doesn't want to die. Man is like that. We don't want to die. What for? What are we living for? Unless there is a reason or a purpose or an explanation, it leaves one puzzled. And yet at any cost I want not to die. I'll do my best not to die. But what for? Why do I want to prolong my existence? Like the worm, it wants to live as long as possible. What for? Why do we want to live? We have not put any goal in front of us. That requires more consciousness. If I have more consciousness, I put a target, I put a goal, I put an aim, and I want to live for this. But if that consciousness has not developed, I just want to be. The first movement of the life force is to be. This is what was sometimes referred to by Sri Aurobindo and the mother, a phrase by the French philosopher Bergson, l'élan vital, the drive to be. To be, just to be. To be what? To be. Not to be wiped off. I just want to live. But we have absolutely no reason to want to be, unless we develop a certain consciousness and a purpose. And that is not the vital. Something else has to come into play. And you have a kind of a dream, a hope, an aspiration, a vision, and say, I want to go there, I want to become like that. And I put all my energy and all my life force in order to arrive at that goal. Then it's different. But for a very long time, man doesn't have that. He just is. The most thing man dislikes most is death. What for? He doesn't look at it as a, sometimes it's a blessing. For many, I have nothing to live for, I might as well leave. No, I don't want that. I don't want to leave, I want to stay in a body on the earth. Though I have no awareness, no purpose for continuing to want to stay. And that is, in a sense, what Sri Aurobindo elsewhere defines as a tragedy, which is a failure of the soul. The soul has not taken up the charge of the life. There is nothing to live for. Unless I have something which gives my life a significance, there is no life, which is worth talking about. That's the first sentence of the mother's essay on the science of life. An aimless life is a joyless life. But upon the quality of your aim lies the quality of your life. What is the quality of your life? It depends on the quality of your aim. If you don't have an aim, if you live from day to day, I get up in the morning, go to do the office, do my work, come home, have my food, enjoy a little small pleasure, going here, there, and then going to bed. It is doesn't have any significance. That is the whole thing. What is the quality of our life? Quality of our life today, they discuss, by quality of life today, is your life more sophisticated? Do you have more money? Can you buy better things? Or quality of your inner life? What kind of an inner life do you have? We don't bother with that. Amid a tedious crawl of drab desires, she writhed, a worm mid worms in nature's mud. Then, titan statured, sometimes you have great, ambitious beings, human beings, but who have been swept away by a tremendous egoistic desire, like those who want to conquer half the world or more than half. Then titan stature took all earth for food, ambition the seas for robe, for crown the stars, and shouting strode from peak to giant peak, clamoring for worlds to conquer and to rule. This also is part of the vital. And that is why you have great conquerors, great warriors, those who are not satisfied with the little area in which they live. They want their country, they want other countries, they want the whole world. They want to master this, they want to conquer that, they want to take charge of everything. Why? It is just the kind of a vital force. That is an asuric thing. I'm not mentioning names, but there are some like that. Okay. Shall we stop there?